Good afternoon, you're listening to KFSK News for Monday, August 17th. I'm Taylor Heckert. The Petersburg Borough Assembly tonight will look at an appeal from a tribal government that wants to subdivide a property in order to build a communications tower. Tidal Network, the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribe of Alaska's broadband company, has plans to build three communications towers in Petersburg. One is already erected on Mill Road, and construction for a second has begun at Papke's Landing. The project has been controversial. For the last year, residents have repeatedly testified about their concerns with new towers in town. In June, the Petersburg Borough Assembly agreed to sell a small piece of borough-owned land near the town's fire hall to Tidal Network. It's part of a much larger borough-owned lot. In order for Tidal Network to buy that lot, the larger parcel must be subdivided. Last month, Tlingit and Haida submitted a minor subdivision request to Petersburg's Planning Commission, which failed. Tlingit and Haida appealed the decision. The issue now moves to the Borough Assembly, acting in its role as the Board of Adjustment. The Assembly will meet tonight to discuss the appeal at 5:30, right before the regular meeting. Also tonight, the Borough Assembly will have final readings on ordinances that would establish nepotism standards for elected officials, create a service area in Thomas Bay, and update the Borough Code. The Assembly meets tonight at 6 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. KFSK will broadcast that meeting live. You can find the full agenda on our website, kfsk.org. Juneau residents in the glacial outburst flood zone celebrated last Thursday afternoon as the Mendenhall River crested at a level well below initial predictions. The event was much less destructive than disastrous floods that struck over the past 3 years. KTOO's Alex Solomon reports.
The flood crested at 14.7 feet on the Mendenhall Lake gauge at 2:15 p.m. on Thursday, according to the National Weather Service. As floodwaters started to recede soon after, only a handful of residents reported damage. Zoe Kaplan is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Juneau. During a live stream just before 3 p.m. Thursday, she announced the news.
We have crested officially, and we are now on the way back down. We did it, Juneau.
Ann Lind lives in the flood zone on Marion Drive. She says she's been anxiously waiting for the flood all spring and summer. Last year, her home flooded when drainage pipes failed and water leaked through the flood wall.
You know, for months, it was like this slow-moving bullet coming straight at me and didn't know if it was going to be a hit or a miss. And today, it's a miss.
This year, Lynn says water didn't even touch the Hesco barriers that make up the flood wall in her backyard.
This flood this year is the scenario we all wanted, we all hoped for.
A couple of riverfront homeowners on Kilowich Drive say their crawl spaces flooded this year due to seepage, but they were able to pump out the water. View Drive residents saw the worst flooding, as they have every year. This is the second year in a row they were left without the protection of the flood wall constructed by the City and Borough of Juneau and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Mandy Malott lives at the end of the street. Last year, she and her neighbors set up their own flood wall made of Hesco barriers and an earthen berm in an attempt to protect their homes. That year, she says her home was spared, but there was still a lot of damage throughout the neighborhood. She says she's celebrating as she and others who put up barriers on the street didn't see flooding in their homes this year.
The emotions that are running through us are a big sense of relief and thankfulness to our friends and our neighbors. That we got through the night and this gorgeous day together.
Malachi Thorrington also lives on View Drive, where he says his house and his next door neighbors flooded this year, but not as badly as in the past. Downstream on Meadow Lane, near Juneau International Airport and the mouth of the river, Bob Jacobson watched the flood from his son's deck and says he saw a tree strike the barriers across the river.
You can see a log impaled in the Hesco barriers.
That's pretty cool.
It shoved it in,
yeah,
and then it snapped off.
Oh,
it broke.
Okay.
So there are some damaged Hesco barriers down here, but it's held up really well.
We'll get fixed.
Within minutes, Army Corps crews chainsawed the log away from the barrier. The Hesco barriers downstream from Brotherhood Bridge are new this year. There was some seepage, but residents there say that was nothing compared to last year when water rose within feet of homes. Jeff Garman is the meteorologist in charge at the Weather Service in Juneau, and he lives on Meander Way, a street that's been hit hard by flooding in the past. As the flood peaked, he had minor pooling in his backyard, which was piped back over the Hesco flood wall by pumps provided by the Army Corps.
We're fortunate this year we didn't have an atmospheric river going into this. I think that was our saving grace.
Garman says he's proud of how the city, tribe, local researchers, federal agencies, and countless others worked collaboratively to support residents in the flood zone.
It's something Juneau should be proud of, that as a community, we came together.
By Thursday evening, residents in the evacuation zone were notified that it was safe to return home. With help from Clarice Larson and Corinne Smith in Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
Four-wheelers and dirt bikes braving Kodiak's Saltery Cove Trail this summer faced an unexpected obstacle. Trail users have recently faced thousands of dollars in vehicle damage, caused partly by a furry culprit. As KMXT's Catherine Irving reports, a new solution to fix the trail is on the way.
There are just three trucks at the dirt parking lot for Saltery Cove Road, around 25 miles south of Kodiak, on a Monday afternoon in early August.
Five bears on the river today, and the horses are always coming by and saying hi.
One of the three trucks parked on that Monday belongs to Mike Brown. He owns and runs Salty Fly Safaris, a guided fishing company in Kodiak. A month earlier, he says the same parking lot was packed full of trucks unloading four-wheelers and dirt bikes as guided tours and local fishermen hit Saltery Creek to fish for sockeye salmon. But then, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game reduced the daily sockeye limit at Saltery Creek from 5 to 2 fish because of low returns. Brown says that with the 30-minute drive on the highway from town and the hour-and-a-half four-wheeler ride on the trail to get to the creek, it's not worth it anymore for most people to make the trip.
Well, now that it's down to 2 fish, you see almost nobody out here.
The reduced bag limit isn't the only thing keeping people off the trail to Saltery this summer. The trail has also been plagued with issues. The biggest, a massive pond on the south end of the trail. Brown says it's racked up quite the casualty list.
It was 4 feet deep. It drowned a bunch of machines. One weekend, they were just scattered all over the place trying to get through it.
Ralph Aguero is another Kodiak fishing guide who leads tours on Saltery Creek. He says the damage has been hurting his fellow guides' wallets.
That's thousands of dollars of damage. Labor is very costly, and as a business, we can't afford that cost.
So what caused such record high waters and thousands of dollars in damage?
Beavers present a unique set of challenges.
Bill Dunker is an area biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak. Beavers were introduced to Kodiak for the first time in 1925, and since then, Dunker says they've spread all over the archipelago.
I'm just looking at the map trying to think of where we haven't run into them. But yeah, they're pretty extensive. They've done very well for themselves here in Kodiak.
He says the beavers are an ongoing problem on the Saltery Cove Trail. They have an innate instinct to dam up running water, creating ponds that protect their lodges from predators. Dunker says that previously, locals and guides took charge of handling the problem, either by removing dams or getting permits to trap the beavers. But he says that's a short-term solution.
It doesn't take long for dispersing juveniles from other lodge complexes throughout the area to move into those unoccupied home ranges and pick up where the last guy left off.
Dunker went out on the trail at the beginning of August to set up a more permanent solution. Using some extra grant funding from a state project to improve the Saltery Cove trail system, he put in what are known as water control structures at the site of the dam. The structures are made up of a large pipe running through the dam and a cage at one end. The pipe is set up at a certain height to make sure the water level doesn't get too high, and the cage protects it from beavers. Dunker says it's been a balancing act getting the structures to work. When he installed the first one, the beavers went and built a dam somewhere else instead. So he says he had to install a second one with a slightly higher position, so the beavers still had a pond they were satisfied with.
It's a bit of a negotiation with them to some degree or another.
Brown with Salty Fly Safaris says the structures are working so far. The pond is back down to a manageable level. But he says conditions on the trail are still rough as of August 10th. His vehicle and others have broken down because of it.
Some years are rocky and everything, but this year is as bad overall as it's been.
Dunker says that the Island Trails Network is working with the Kodiak Island Borough and others to get the trail fixed up. And 2 days after I spoke to Brown, Fish and Game restored the limit on Saltery Creek back to 5 fish, meaning that soon that dirt parking lot might be full once again. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Catherine Irving.
There are a few places on Prince of Wales Island in southern southeast Alaska to learn the ins and outs of construction work. But a high school class is looking to change that by training the next generation of skilled laborers. It's part of one school district's push to revive the island's career and technical education programming. And as KRBD's Hunter Morrison reports, students are already at work.
It's a rainy evening in Thorne Bay on the eastern side of the island. Rod Morrison, superintendent of the Southeast Island School District, walks up to a house and points to a newly constructed wooden deck by the front door. The aroma of freshly cut lumber fills the air.
Do you know what kind of wood? Is this cedar?
It is cedar, yes. Nice. Yellow cedar.
Nice. little red cedar, most of it is yellow cedar though.
The deck and nearby wheelchair ramp is one of three that high school students recently built for the community's teacher housing. They also constructed a food pantry and a home deck in Nocatee, a small town 40 miles northwest. Morrison says the eight-week-long summer construction class is one way the district is trying to prepare its students for the workforce.
You know, our students in Southeast Alaska, especially on the island, not all of them go to college, but they all go to the workforce. And it's really important to us that the kids, when they leave our schools, can contribute and make a wage and do what they'd like to do.
According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, the construction industry has seen steady growth since the pandemic. But training opportunities for the trade, especially for those under 18 years old, are few and far between on the large, isolated island. It's the first time the school district has had full-fledged career and technical education, or CTE, programming since they lost state funding for it almost a decade ago. They're the recipient of two federal grants to fund teachers, materials, training opportunities, and more. The push is part of a collaborative effort with three other school districts on the island to increase student access to CTE programming. They're also partnering with tribal-led entities, Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, and Generation Southeast to make these courses happen. Morrison says the construction class is the first step in building new career pathways for students on the island.
The idea is that, you know, Alaska's workforce comes from the lower 48. We want to help supply Alaska workforce with Alaskans.
The new construction class provided high school students with real-world building experience. They also learned basics, like rise and run, while constructing staircases and decks. Students even got paid an hourly wage.
I think it's good for the kids to have something constructive to do during the summer.
That's course instructor Daniel Nelson.
A lot of times on these small islands, the island doesn't have a lot to offer for teenagers.
Nelson is an experienced construction worker and will soon be teaching several CTE classes on the island.
And so I think it benefits them with like a 9-to-5 job, understanding what it takes to show up every morning, to be diligent, to work hard, and to understand what a job is going to look like after high school.
Nelson, who was pretty hands-off when students were building, says he wants them to walk away from the class knowing how to build a deck on their own. He says even if students don't pursue a career in construction, the skills they learn is something they could add to their tool belt. Many of the roughly half dozen students who enrolled in the construction course took a woodshop class last school year, where they learned how to use power tools. Others have prior experience in construction work and wanted to build upon those skills. But Tristan Dolan, a sophomore at Thorn Bay School, says he had no construction experience and wanted to learn something new.
I think my favorite thing about this class was just learning the overall idea of how it would go on a construction site, or like a part of it, and just like seeing the overall idea.
Morrison, the superintendent, says the new course provides a different medium to learn math. He says that's beneficial to students who might otherwise be unmotivated in a traditional classroom setting. That, he says, can also build confidence.
You know, in my opinion, is a lot of young people struggle with confidence. And I think when you build something and you see it come together and there's a sense of pride that happens with that.
Morrison says the district plans to ramp up the island's CTE courses in the coming school year. The district is going to offer an electrical program where students can get their apprenticeship card with the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. They also plan to offer courses in welding, scuba diving, and other trades. Reporting in Thorn Bay, on Prince of Wales Island, I'm Hunter Morrison.
For KFSK, I'm Taylor Heckert.